can't remember anything that happened before 2 weeks ago.
But it's a little mellow for my show. Wouldn't you say? I better rev it up right now. Anyway, I'm sitting beside an open window. I hope nobody comes in. Anyway, it's June 15th, 2011. Because there's lots of people there. That's why I'm by an open window. It's the summer. And today I want to speak about the difference between image and reality. Before we get to the real show, I want to talk about the difference between image and reality. You know, a few weeks ago, I announced on Twitter that I love Gwyneth Paltrow. Yes, I did! I said it! And naturally, somebody had to challenge me, and it was the resume strategy. Wouldn't you know? She never does that normally, but she came after me. She said, oh, isn't that an odd thing to say? Not many men I know would say they love some celebrity. And, of course, she meant not many real men. Because I'll tell you why. Because most guys are too smart to admit it. It's not because they're reading fan magazines. Imagine this. You go to a movie with your wife, and on the way home, you turn to her and say, you know, honey, I just love Gwyneth Paltrow. That's not smart. He won't do it. But social media is authentic. And if millions of dollars were spent on Shakespeare in Love just to make Gwyneth Paltrow seem lovable, I'm not ashamed to say that it worked on me. In fact, listen to this. After I saw There's Something About Mary, I was in love with Cameron Diaz. Yes, I was. And that was a low-budget film. They didn't spend a lot of money on that. And it worked anyway. Yeah. And a few weeks ago, actually a few years ago, where am I? I had a crush on Amy Winehouse. I liked her. I liked her music. And I liked the way she looked in her videos. Usually I hate tattoos. I didn't mind them on her, even though they were kind of weird. You know? But I guess that was too shallow because my good friend Maureen Sherrup, the tiger mom of telephone sourcing, she had to come after me. She took it upon herself to explain the meaning of the word skank. Skank. S-K-A-N-K. I didn't know what it meant, you know. And it took someone who's always complaining about women stabbing each other in the back to come and tell me. I guess she couldn't stand that some shallow guy like me was getting taken in by a media image. Remember I said this was about image and reality. But I got to tell you, I'm going to go on. I'm not the only one who's susceptible. I read an article a few years ago by a guy, I don't know, he went to a class reunion or something with his daughter. It was her class reunion. And who was there but Gwyneth Paltrow? Yes, and he wrote an article about it. He said she looked lovely, and she sang a song, and then, lo and behold, she danced with him. And at the end of the article, he said, imagine that, I danced with Gwyneth Paltrow. Now, I have something else to admit. I saw Gwyneth Paltrow on TV recently, and she wasn't like she was in the movie. She wasn't like she was in Shakespeare in Love. And in fact, I've seen her in a couple of other movies, and she was never the same as she was in that first one. And it's true with Cameron Diaz as well. I've seen her a few times, but she's never been the same as she was in There's Something About Mary. And poor Amy Winehouse, she's a drug addict. Every picture of her looks awful. It's hard to feel anything for her. But sorry. So I know what you're thinking now. The recruiting animal, he's going to swing around to recruiting and tell us don't be taken in by shallow images that were crafted to impress you. But that's not what I'm going to say. I'm going to say just the opposite. Yes, I am. I'm going to say that you can get your resume written by a pro, and you can have a career counselor train you to interview, and you're still never gonna make the kind of impression you want. And you know why? Because you're not in a movie in which every word is written a scene doesn't go well, you know what they do? They just reshoot 50 times if they have to. You can't do that. No. And listen, here's something else. Have you ever seen those politicians? They're giving a speech, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the speech, they start gesturing mechanically. Yeah, that's what you get from coaching. You say to yourself, oh, I got to move my arms now to let everyone know I'm still alive. But listen to me. If you got to tell yourself when to move, you're just going to look like a robot and convince everybody that you don't have any life in you at all. I'm running out of air. I got to get off. But I want to tell you, if Tony Blair makes a speech, he doesn't have to do that because he's a naturally good speaker. Barack Obama doesn't have to do it. And you know, President Kennedy, he was very good in interviews. He knew how to lay on the charm. Yeah, but you didn't have to teach him to do it. He was a natural, and you're not. So if you go to an interview, don't worry about being a charmer. No. Focus on your professional knowledge. Yeah. And if you suffer from stage fright, take some kind of medicine. Now, Jerry, what show is this? Jerry. Jerry. I know. I know, dude.
Maybe. No. You blew it. You blew it. We're just going to skip it.
The recruiting animal.
Something about Mary.
I didn't say Kirk Cameron was.
Oh, I thought you said you fell in love with him during that movie. Did I hear that wrong?
That's what the resume strategy is.
My bad. I'm sorry. You can cut that out of the tape, can't you?
Yeah, okay. No problem. We got a diversity specialist today. We can leave all that kind of stuff in, okay?
Okay.
So let me ask, is Valentino Martinez here with us today?
Good morning, Animal. Good morning, everybody.
Okay, now I got to compliment you on something, Valentino. Before we start, you like to be called Tino, right?
Tino, yeah, Tino works.
That's good because, you know, most people, they're so stuck up. They're so insecure that, you know, you can't call them Johnny, you got to call them Jonathan or some kind. You can't call them Judy, you got to call them Judith. They think that makes them better. It doesn't. I admire you for calling yourself Tino. It means like little or something like that, right?
No, that's tiny.
What does Tino mean?
It's short for Valentino.
If I call Jerry Tino, it means little Jerry, doesn't it?
Jerito.
Image versus sounds like burrito.
Yeah, Benito, okay, we got another guest before we get
going.
We
got a Jewish-Canadian dabbling in Spanish here.
We got Shane Mack, I think, is coming on to tell us why he moves around so much. Shane, are you here?
I am here, Animal.
Yeah, we can't hear you. I mean, can you talk? If you're going to use a cell phone, can you shout? Can I hear you?
I'm talking loud. Can you hear me?
No. Can anybody hear him?
Yeah.
Sounds great.
I'll introduce him and see how it goes. This is Shane Mack, at Shane Mack, S-H-A-N-E-M-A-C. I've known the guy for less than 2 years. He's had 3 jobs already. He's in Gen Y, and they're known to be job hoppers. He's had 3 jobs, and they're all with good companies. I can't figure out why he's moving around so much, so he offered to come on and in all the authenticity of social media and explain it to us. So go ahead, Shane, here's your chance.
So 3 jobs, 5.5 years. It all comes down to timing, Animal. I mean, it comes down to my first job was 2 years. I built a hyperlocal ad network at Cobalt Group for
hyperlocal.
Every dealership in the U.S. So we did about $20 million of ad spend from GM every year and bridged the gap between OEMs doing the local advertising for dealers converting all the leads to dealers, and basically dealers were happy, OEMs were happy.
Yeah. I asked you why you moved. I didn't ask about your job. Oh. Why'd you move?
Basically, I moved it to the end. It's because we got acquired. Sold for $600 million to ADP, and it was a done deal.
Yeah, where'd you go? Don't give me irrelevant information. Where'd you go? What was your title at GM?
I wasn't a GM. I was at Cobalt Group, and I was a product lead for the promotions group.
Okay. And then, so you were there how many years?
2 years.
2 years. And then where'd you go?
I went to GIST, and I was the marketing guy.
Yeah, that was a startup.
GIST. Yep.
Right.
So I went to GIST.
And you were, marketing manager, right?
Yes. I was the marketing guy at GIST, and then we sold to BlackBerry in February. I went to Iceland after we got acquired. It was done on the day of acquisition, cash transferred. I came back from Iceland on a trip. Was working at BlackBerry, and there was no reason to stay. I didn't want to work at BlackBerry. And the guys from Zarly were like, hey, we need someone to lead product. We have all this investment, and there's a new deal. You want to be in?
Guys from where? Guys from where?
Zarly.
How do you spell it?
Z-A-A-R-L-Y.
Everybody knows how to spell it, dude. Where have you been, animal? That thing is hot.
What do they do?
It's a local marketplace where buyers can post how much they want to pay for it, and people around you can fulfill it if they have it.
Okay,
simple
so
as that.
That's, you know, Jerry's making my point. It's a good company to be working with, and they hired you. And how long did you stay there, Shane?
At Zarly?
Yeah.
I'm here right now.
Dude, that's where he is.
Wow.
Man, everybody knows this but you.
I thought he went to Apple.
No, I didn't go to Apple.
He's right here, man.
I mean, I feel like I'm the luckiest dude on earth, Animal. I've gotten acquired twice, and it's the end of the story, right? It's like, move on. I don't want to go to corporate job, and I'll start another company.
BlackBerry's a Canadian company. Why'd you jump ship there?
Because I didn't want to work for BlackBerry when they're not even up to speed on mobile.
Okay.
I couldn't figure out how to use my BlackBerry,
I'm on the wrong
so I had
track.
To leave.
Why'd you leave GISCO? That's because it was sold to BlackBerry. So I'm on the wrong track. I thought you were job hopping, and you've just been losing jobs pretty much. Is that right?
Basically, yep. Get acquired and get kicked out, I guess.
Okay. Thank you, Shane. That's all we have to know from you.
Hey, Shane. Good luck, man. You are smoking, man.
Fire.
You're on the right track.
No,
Love your story. Love your story. Hyper local,
hey,
baby. Hyper local.
Thanks, Animal. Have a good day. Buzzword. Bye.
Okay. Great. Tino, are you still here?
I'm still here.
Okay, you got to hold on again for another minute. We got now a new feature called Jerry's Social Media Moment. Okay, and the topic for this week is for Jerry is Empire Avenue. The famous Bill Borman asked Jerry how he knows that Empire Avenue is no good for recruiting if he hasn't used it. So you know what Jerry said? He said, I don't have to kill somebody to know that murder is wrong, okay? And I just wanted to know if Jerry had anything to add to that. Jerry, are you there?
You know something, Animal, just the mere thought of Empire Avenue, clout, all these, it just about makes me sick. I don't want to hear another word about it. I could puke right now.
Can I put a hotel on Empire Avenue so that anybody who stops on my street will owe me so much money? It sounds like a game. It's a Monopoly game.
Oh.
So.
Okay,
I'd
Jerry,
like
let
that.
Me ask
now,
you
that
something.
one might. I like
Jerry,
that.
Jerry, come on. You are wrecking the show. It is going downhill now. I'm going to agree with you. But I have one more question. Would you go so far to say that Bill Borman is like a little child who's enchanted by any shiny new bauble in social media that comes up, but he has no perspective on its actual usefulness for recruiters? Would you endorse that statement?
I would endorse that statement.
Okay.
Though I wouldn't myself say it. Is there a difference?
Yeah, there is kind of. I'd say it's you're taking the safe route branding, and maybe that's a good way to go.
Okay,
so Valentino, Tino Martinez, I'm going to introduce you because I usually ask people to introduce themselves, and they just don't know how, okay? So I read something on your LinkedIn profile. You put it there, so it's almost the same as you introducing yourself. And here it goes. Stop me if I'm going on too long. From astronaut to Top Gun fighter pilots and design engineers to programmers, buyers, toxicologists, agronomists and veterinarians to MBA, sales, marketing, and management. Valentino Martinez spearheaded the staffing effort for the largest defense contract in the history of defense programs. In the 1980s, the $20.8 billion B-1B bomber program. As a technical recruiter, project recruitment manager, and eventually staffing and university relations manager, he played a lead role in facilitating the hiring of, listen to this, 5,421 highly talented professionals in a 12-month period. Martinez led a history-making recruitment team that hired an average of 5,000 high-tech professionals per year for three consecutive years at Rockwell International's Aircraft Division in Southern California, a feat unheard of and unmatched in any industry, earning him the accolade in 1988 of team's top recruiter from the North American Aircraft Division, and it was given out by President Sam Iacobellis, now retired. Okay, I'll just read a little more. Martinez also distinguished himself in recruitment roles at the U.S. Army Officer Personnel Directorate, California Department of Corrections and Transportation, the Mexican American Opportunity Foundation, Boeing, Monsanto, Monsanto Agricultural, Pharmacia, NutraSweet, Golden Products, Dow AgroScience, Ralston Purina, Nestle, it's like Ralston Purina and Nestle Purina. I guess that was a takeover, something like that. Now, I got to ask you, Tino.
Did he really do all that stuff?
Tino, did you really do all that?
I did.
God, that's off the hook, man.
Yeah, isn't that a little over the top? Tino, why did you move around so much? Tino, answer me, okay?
A moving target's kind of hard to hit, so that's why I move.
You know what? Don't give me dumb answers. You're here to get really, questioned, okay?
That B1B stuff is cool, though.
Hey, turn off your speakers, who's ever listening to me!
Oh, my God.
Hey, Tino.
Yes.
Tino.
Hello?
Yeah.
Janice, you going to ask him questions or me? Go ahead, ask him.
Who's on the site?
Idiot has me playing there. Take me off the speakers, you jerk!
We were working with Rockwell in Columbus, Ohio at the same time.
Janice, talk loud.
Oh, are you kidding me? All righty. Do you still work in aviation? Have you quit doing that?
Well, I stopped working in aviation in 1995 when I left Monsanto.
Okay. Well, kudos. I just want to say kudos because we were doing the same kind of thing in Columbus when you were doing it in California. That's it.
Kind of name dropping there a little bit, Janice. A little bit of
name dropping. I got to tell you, you guys were both doing it 100 years ago. Does it make any difference now?
Well, Animal, if you're not going to sing, we got to talk about something. I want to sing.
Well, I do have a song. I do have a song ready, but the show's going downhill. We got to get something in there. Tino, where did you see? I tried to let the people talk, and they're not asking any good questions for Jerry or her. Where did this, over the top, feat never done before accolade come from?
Well, the kind of the bizarre thing was before.
Look, I got to tell you something else. Pep it up on this show. Don't sound like you're half asleep, okay?
Well, the feat is astronomical when you think about it, because when Reagan opened the doors for the B-1 bomber program, he started to develop the defense contract in the Defense Department so big that there were 12 to 20 aerospace companies vying for those contracts, and the B-1 bomber was one of the biggest of that time frame. And they had to hire 15,000 engineers and support people, production people, manufacturing, R&D, across the board to make that happen, and they had to do it. There was no game involved. So what was interesting about this is I was working for a minority community-based organization in East Los Angeles called the Mexican American Opportunity Foundation. And one of the board of directors was a Rockwell vice president, And he asked our foundation, as well as the Urban League and other minority groups, we're hiring thousands of people in Southern California, in Oklahoma, and in Columbus. Can you help us? And they said, send us your best person, and we'll start negotiating how we can get this done. Well, my president sent me over. I was interviewed by the hiring manager who said, hey, you got 2 degrees, you got great people skills, but you have no aircraft experience. We can't use you. He sent me home. I told the president. He told the board member. The board member called somebody in personnel. Personnel called me back, hired me as a buck one recruiter, and told me to my face, we don't want to hire you. We don't think you're qualified, but you know somebody, so you do have a Pentagon experience recruiting, but you have no aircraft experience, so we're going to hire you at the lowest level.
You know, just speed it up. I'm letting you talk because I don't have any questions. But, you know, get to the point, will you?
The point was they told me you have 6 months before probation. If you prove yourself, we'll keep you. If you can't make it, you're out. You're going to go against a 30-year veteran in recruiting.
Why did they
hate you? I got a question.
Go ahead.
Okay.
How did you get in when you got no experience? What did you do?
You got
in because
you had a pal in the community, the Mexican community opportunity thing, right?
Well, the experience they were questioning was the aircraft and aerospace experience. I did have recruiting experience at the Pentagon, but they wanted aircraft experience, ideally. So anyway, long story short, I was leveraged in. They put me in the lowest level position. They said, if you can't hang with a very experienced recruiter, you got 6 months to prove yourself. In 6 months, I replaced that person. In 2 years, I replaced the person that told me I wasn't qualified.
Have you ever gotten into a company?
You let me ask a question.
You need that theme from Rocky in the background.
Why were you so much
Rocky theme.
Better.
Rocky theme.
Why were you better than them?
Because I embarrassed them. Well, let me put it this way. Recruiting is pretty straightforward. Here's an open job. Here's a job description. Here's a hiring manager. And go find somebody to fit this.
Yep.
I started to do that night and day, and recruiters that were working there were telling me, slow down, you're making us look bad. And I just did it harder. And I improved myself.
What does that mean that you were doing it night and day, where you're like working 20 hours a day? I mean, what does that mean?
Well, night and day. I mean, I would work long hours. I would call people in the wee hours, and if they were interested, we were talking, and if they were qualified, we got them positions.
Okay. How did you know? How did you recruit thousands of people in 1 year when you didn't even understand their jobs? You were going across, that's what I want to know. You were going across so many different job categories. How could you have the skills to know who's a good, design engineer for this kind of project and who's a Top Gun pilot? How would you know all those things?
Animal, first, I didn't recruit thousands of people. I recruited a number of people. I was on a team that recruited thousands of people.
Okay. Well, how many did you recruit personally?
Well, I have the record, at least
seven.
I consider it a world record, of 21 offers in 1 day.
21 hires in 1 day?
21 job offers in 1 day, yeah.
Well, what kind of jobs are we talking about there? What kind of jobs?
We're
not
talking
sweepers,
engineer,
right?
We're talking R&D, we're talking procurement, buyers, production.
Here's my point. That 21 is pretty good. How did you know how to assess those people? What did you do? Put ads in the papers? Was that your primary sourcing technique?
Of course. Well, we did everything. We had agencies, search agencies. We had full-page ads in all the top aerospace cities. We were in the community. I went into the minority community. We did a lot of things. In terms of my work ethic, I worked long hours. Having worked in a prison before I took the job with Rockwell, this was a piece of cake. That has nothing compared to the challenge I faced in the prison.
Why? What's hard about working in a prison?
Your life's in danger 24/7.
Why? Everybody's under lock and key.
Right.
Have
you heard of this?
Animal. In Susanville, California, there was so much overcrowding in the lock and key prisons that they started to put the crazies in the barracks situation, which Susanville is. It's a camp. It was designed to have inmates fight forest fires, and they were in 18-man bunks.
Yeah, okay, so what were you doing, hiring prisoners or hiring the administrative staff who ran the prison? You weren't hiring prisoners. The judge was taking care of that for you.
No. I was running a program that was rehabilitating, training, counseling prisoners in lockup, as they approach the year to 2 year parole date, and then they were ready to parole. We job placed them with IBM, Hewlett Packard, Xerox, and other companies. And so, but the point being is that there's a percentage of inmates that will program, if you will, that will agree to the training, and there's 80 to 85% of the inmates that are there because they're bad people.
Okay, so is there any lessons that, that you could teach regular job hunters that they might learn from prisoners?
Yeah, control your appetite.
Okay, that's not a lesson. That's not a job hunting lesson.
It is a lesson. I present on campuses across the country, and I tell them the difference between an astronaut orbiting a planet in a space capsule and an inmate locked up in prison is one sacrificed and was a top performer, cracked the books, and excelled. The other was a shortcut artist who went into party and did it at the expense of others, and one is in a lockup and one is orbiting the planet.
Yeah, okay, but we're into Brian Kaplan here. He studied all those twin studies, and what it proves is that if you're born to hang, you're going to hang. You can't teach someone to be an astronaut if he's a shortcut artist. Can you?
No, that would be hard.
Okay, anyway, I'm
losing track. You build astronauts from high achievers.
Did you have a question, Janice? Go ahead, or Jerry. Or Janice first. I got a question. Janice! Oh, she hung up already.
Animal.
Oh, thanks, Janice.
Animal.
Could take it.
Animal.
Could take it aside for 1 second.
Let
Go
me
ahead.
Ask answer a question you asked earlier in terms of how am I qualified to distinguish between a Top Gun fighter pilot or a design engineer. I'm not a technical person. I defer that to the technical people. I'm the person that works in the dimension of finding out of the chemistry, affordability, geography works, and then I hand them over. The resume tells me they're functionally capable or qualified.
And also, aren't you a little bit counting on the candidate themselves to know whether they are a pilot or not?
Oh,
and
certainly.
I think you're over. You've got too much going on where you think you have to know exactly, is this person ready to step in and do all of this job today?
Jerry, the recruiter
absurd.
Has to assess the candidates and send really only good candidates to the hiring manager.
No, qualified candidates. They determine the good or lack of good.
I don't think so. They want,
I know so.
If they're paying us, and even if they're paying Tino, who's internal, you know, they want to get excellent candidates. Am I wrong, Tino, just saying qualified people or excellent people? Is there a difference?
Well, you're both right. The bottom line is, I don't have to be an expert. I just have to be the facilitator of getting the expert together with the expert.
Right. Right. Animal, you make it seem like you have to have the uncanny knowledge of every discipline that you've ever recruited for.
Exactly.
And you don't,
bizarre.
Man.
In fact, you'll embarrass yourself if you try to approach an expert by talking jargon and they know you don't know what the hell you're talking about.
The expert should know if he's the expert or not.
You got
right,
it.
I stroke them on the...
Mel Benwell's listening. Lou Brenda's listening. I want to know if they agree with him. We're supposed to screen these guys. We have all those buzzwords, and we have to say, do you have this experience on a scale of 1 to 10? How much experience do you have? Do you know the answers to these questions? And you can tell if they're giving you a stupid answer lots of the time, can't you? Or you should be able to tell. And a recruiter, that's why they didn't want to hire you. A recruiter who's specializing in a field, he or she should be able to ask those questions and get answers and understand them. A guy like Steve Levy is an engineer. He's better positioned than you or me to qualify candidates. Am I right about that, Tino?
You're right, but how is he going to help you with buyers or R&D? I mean, you know, his limit is his specialty. My general approach gives me a lot more opportunities.
Okay, so why did you replace those people who didn't like you? Did they quit and now you're saying you replaced them, or did you just outshine them? And if you did...
I outperformed them. I got the results.
I want to know.
It's easy. If you get a bunch of jobs, you have a bunch of opportunities to make them happen. And we're advertising. I mean, it's not like people send us some dumb resumes where you don't see any qualifications. We got highly qualified people. Southern California has probably no less than 20 aerospace companies.
Okay, so you're saying it, you got a lot of numbers there, that, and you can brag about it, but it was really just a cinch. You're making it sound like a brainless kind of thing.
No, I'm actually not. It wasn't a cinch because we were going against 12 aerospace companies that were looking for the same exact thing.
I want to know, why did you excel? How did you excel? I'm begging you to tell me.
Let me tell you how we succeeded. We perfected the offer process. We could make you a contingent offer on the spot. By the time our competitors got to you, we already had a formal offer in your hands, and they were so overwhelmed and impressed with our dynamic that we were decision makers that they came with us.
Okay, now who was responsible for that? That sort of expediting the hire process, was that you?
It was a coordinated team effort. For example, I would fly into Seattle on a Wednesday with full page ads that I'm at the Westin Hotel, and I was obviously going after Boeing people, and I would set up some interviews, and then I would, by the way, pre-qualify them with my managers in Southern California. They would fly up on Friday night. We'd interview all day, all afternoon Friday, all day Saturday. They were gone on Sunday, and that was one of the days that I made 21 offers in one day.
On a Sunday?
On a Saturday.
On a Saturday. Okay. He makes it sound, you know, recruiting sound like just like a paper pusher. Am I right about that?
No, well, there's a lot of paper to push, but you still have to distinguish between who's qualified and who's not qualified, who's affordable and who's movable.
This guy is quite possibly the sharpest recruiter you've had on your show in years.
You're just saying that.
Thanks, Jerry.
No, I'm not. He gets it. Meanwhile, he's making offers to people for his company, and you're the recruiter at the other company sitting there with a stack of resumes going, man, I can't tell who are the absolute 100% shoe-in guaranteed people that I would stake my life on knowing 100% that they're the best ever.
Hey. Gino, can I make $1 million just by putting ads in the job boards for the positions I'm trying to fill?
I don't understand the question.
If I'm a headhunter, it sounds like all you got to do is put some ads online in the
job
boards.
Dude, that was 25 years ago, man.
Okay, what would you do today?
Headhunters were beautiful. They would put an ad in the paper that was a one-liner. It just said engineer, blah, 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 specialty, pays $85K. That gets attention to people that are making $65K.
Yep.
They're going to call you.
Okay, yep. Jerry,
they didn't
what do you
have
think
to have
that?
A job description.
Advertising with the price, Jerry.
Yeah, with the price. Like it.
Now,
that was
old
time. I mean,
they see what works for you.
Yeah.
I mean, Animal, now you're talking about running an ad in the newspaper on Sunday. Which was 19.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tito.
Animal, another thing is that if you notice some of the ads that I've posted on recruiting blogs, in those days, most recruiters would put the job description and a P.O. box and mail me a resume. I put my face, my phone number, call me direct. I was Cal Worthington of car sales in California in recruiting. I even was thinking about putting a another thing I did is I put bumper stickers on cars. L.A. is drive time nightmare. Guess what people do when they're in traffic? They read bumper stickers. Mine said, engineers, call 800-JOBS-1. We need to talk, and it had my mug on the bumper
okay,
sticker.
Okay, so I actually posted some of those pictures on Recruiting Animal Show for this show. People, there's a slideshow there, but I could only get a few of them in. But, yeah, I was wondering – who put his picture in here? You put your own picture in there, right?
Yeah.
That
well,
was
the point of it is, if you're a recruiter, you don't want to be a mystery. If you want to be found, you have to be findable. And so many of my competitors were shy. You know what their argument was? I don't want to get overwhelmed with resumes that are useless. They didn't realize that there's a lot of people that will not send you a resume. They want to know who to talk to. They want to talk to you first. If it's a real job, a real opportunity, then they're in the game. But most of them are the silent majority. They won't put themselves in Front Street. They don't want to lose their job.
Okay, so you're saying, though, that it's really good to make yourself visible. In those days, there was no social media. So in those magazine or newspaper ads that I've got up there, I've seen them, you were listed there. It says, call me, Valentino Martinez. So you're saying that's important for them to know who to call. It gives them a sense of security, and that we should do that even today. Is that right?
Not only that, but you have to advertise where people are not looking for jobs. I got a complaint from my boss's boss. He was at a Laker game, and my ad was in a Laker brochure, their program, the game program. And he complained to my boss, said, what the hell are we doing ads in a Laker program? And I said to my boss, ask him, was he looking for a job when he saw that ad? No, he was enjoying the game. The fact is, he may be qualified for something I'm looking for.
Okay, so when you're hiring for that many people, you're sort of like hiring strategically, not even for one job necessarily. You just want to cast a big net, right?
Certainly. I mean, engineers go to sports events. I mean, so I put them everywhere.
Uh-huh.
Popper
Jerry,
stickers,
do you have
fortune cookies.
Jerry, do you put ads? Jerry, do you put ads in those sporting programs, or would you if you had the money?
Sure.
Rayanne?
If I had the money, heck yeah. Talk to
okay.
Dave Perry about that.
How much does it cost to do that? How much does it cost to do that?
Talk to Dave Perry about stuff like that. I mean, he flew airplanes with banners streaming behind them about jobs. I mean,
yeah, that's kind of weird, don't you think?
That's a bit all over the top.
It worked, and now he has a best-selling book.
Yeah, okay.
So.
Yeah. Trying to justify your
and verbal
state.
Summary is mentioned as one of the key technologies to come out in the years.
Verbalsummary.com.
Yes, it is.
Well, hold on a second.
It really
you
is.
Know what? Let me
I know
just
it
read
is.
Something.
I'm
let
serious.
Let me just read something here. Okay, let me read something here. Tino got an endorsement from Martin Yates, a famous recruiter who, talking about job search books, he wrote Knock 'Em Dead way back in the 80s, I think it was, in the first one, or around 1990, and it's been coming out regularly. And he's given an endorsement to Tino on LinkedIn. Here's what he said. A bit pompous. He says, we live in an uncertain world where the knowledge and wisdom required to survive and prosper over the long haul is almost non-existent. Tino is one of the few people who really get it. In 25 years, I have published 14 books, and his books sell a lot. 14 books, each one addressing different aspects of job search and career management. Tino Martinez is one of less than 60 people I have quoted in my entire body of work. Tino, what did you say that he quoted you saying?
Well, it's in thank you for mentioning that. Yates called me. I guess he found me on LinkedIn, liked some of the stuff I was saying in group discussions, and sent me some questions and wanted answers and didn't promise anything and just said, if I use this, I'll quote you. And he sent me an autographed copy. I also put that photograph on recruiting blogs. But what did I do? I simply just was being myself in terms of conversations like this, and people call me based on those.
Yeah, what did you say that he published? Don't have to beg you?
Oh, well, let's see. I've got the book here. Let me grab it. Hang a second.
Don't start looking it up. If you don't know, forget it.
Well,
okay.
I've been quoted in stuff in different
things.
Places. How are you supposed to remember every quote that has ever been published?
Hey, Martin.
Can you remember every person that's ever quoted you anywhere, Animal?
Nobody quotes
I doubt
me.
It.
I don't have to worry. No one famous like Martin Yates quotes me, okay? So anyway, let's move on.
That's the real
ready?
Issue, jealousy.
Okay. There we go. You know,
because
let's take a Tiger Mom moment. Maureen Cherub. Maureen Cherub, are you still here? Maureen Cherub, are you still here?
Surprisingly, no.
She's
you
posting Twitter. She's tweeting about
okay.
it.
Okay. Well, Maureen pointed me to an article today that says if you yawn in an interview and the other person doesn't yawn, it means they don't have much empathy. And there's a lot of proof to these tests have been done. They take students who are subjects for an experiment, and they put the student in a waiting room. And there's someone else in the waiting room. They don't realize it's a researcher. And while they're waiting, the researcher yawns 10 times in 10 minutes. And then the scientists record how often the student yawns in response.
Who's
now,
paying for this stupid science? Government grants would be my guess.
Yeah,
you are, Gary. You are.
This is
yeah.
very important. Each participant was then asked to complete a test for their empathetic skills in which they analyzed pictures of eyes and recorded the emotions shown. The results showed that those who had succumbed most – to the contagious yawning also scored higher in the empathy test. And they also said that psychology students were more susceptible than engineers. Okay? So there's proof that the people who will yawn when you yawn are more empathetic. So, Tino, first of all, would you think that's a good technique in an interview to start yawning to see if that makes the interviewee yawn as well?
I would never do that, and that to me has no validity. If I learned anything in prisons or interviewing inmates, is they're the slickest players in terms of playing the game of what you want to hear and looking for body language, but yawning is not going to do it for me.
Really? Okay, I thought I had some kind of real insight. I could yawn, and if the guy yawned, I would have some insight into his leadership potential. Here's something else. We had a big controversy. We had a big controversy last week. Dan Schwabel, the boy branding guru, he wrote an article on Forbes. Tino, I haven't been on Forbes. I don't know if you have either. And it said that LinkedIn is going to bury job boards. You're an expert with job boards from the buying side, okay, and the hiring side. And I saw this comment under the posting by a guy named Mark Miller. That's Mark with a C, not a K. Bad sign. Anyway, and he's from mycareerformylife.com. And it's four is the numeral four. That's why I would never use the word four in a URL, because you don't know if it's the numeral four or the letters four, but mycareerformylife.com. That's what he runs, and he left the comment. He said, are job boards going to disappear? No, but their relevance is rapidly decreasing. He said, I sat in multiple South by Southwest conference sessions where Fortune 500 recruiters were saying they are posting jobs for shorter periods of time. They have to post jobs on job boards because they're legally obligated to do so, but they post them for as little time as possible and spend most of their time searching LinkedIn or their own resume databases because they've received thousands of resumes in the last couple of years. So he says job boards are no good. They're on their way out. This genius, Dan Schwabel, with 4 years of working experience, none in recruiting, also says that job boards are going to be left behind by LinkedIn. Tino, you're the man here. What's your opinion?
I disagree. I think if you're not leveraging job boards for their true value, you're missing the whole point of the job board. The job board are full of people looking
talk
for jobs.
Talk louder. Talk into the phone.
We can hear him. Animal,
we
stop
can hear
yelling.
Him.
We
fine,
can hear him.
Animal.
Stop yelling.
God. Should I yell?
No,
one of the best guests
fine.
You've had on, and I think you're scaring him off. He's doing a good job of hanging in here, but if I were him, I'd hang up this phone and say, who was that guy? And never
I love
out.
Animal. I love Animal,
keep,
actually.
Okay.
Keep going. Tell us about
job boards.
Are they good?
They're very good if you know how to leverage them. And here's the point that some recruiters miss the value of a job board. They want the candidates, the ideal candidates, to come forward, and they're not finding that. My logic is if I can find the right type of candidate with the right type of company, regardless of his or her skills, I'm going to befriend them for two reasons. I can help them possibly, but more importantly, can they help me? And there happen to be in a target company I'm looking to penetrate. So when you befriend people by helping them with a resume, blah, 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 they're going to be a little bit more forthcoming in terms of who they know in R&D or wherever, or who I should contact relative to what I'm looking for. So if you don't leverage job boards from that perspective, you're crazy.
Tell me, give me a story where that worked for you. And how did you take time to write someone's resume when you're busy recruiting 5,000 people, okay?
Well, the 5,000 people was back in the 80s, and I'm not doing that now, so I have certainly much more time to do that. But
so tell us a story where you helped somebody who then opened his kimono and told you who he's working with, who you were actually looking for.
It happens all the time. For instance, when I was staffing for Nestle in 2006, we were hiring 300 salespeople across the board. They wanted experience. with Kroger, with the top, with Walmart, with the top merchandisers, big box companies, and I'm looking for account executives, et cetera. So you're calling into these stores, you're calling into the job board candidates. Here's one with, 20 years of experience with Walmart, for example. And he's stuck in Arkansas and wants to move up to New York where he's from. And so I'm helping him with his resume, helping him position. And by the way, I'm asking him, who do you know here, there, or wherever? And he's giving me names, people he respects, people that impress them. So I'm leveraging them, and I'm placing no less than 20 of them across the country.
Hold on a second. You know what? You're not really helping this guy. You're saying, I can't use you, but, you know, maybe I'll help you with your resume. Big deal. And you're saying that he just spills his guts to you? I mean, you know, you don't sound like – you don't make me want to spill my guts.
Well, it comes in the process. I'm helping them with what I can help. Some people are helpable. Some people help themselves. And in partnership, sometimes you have a happy ending.
Okay, so you know what? That's pretty a lame endorsement of job boards. Like, I thought you were going to tell me job boards really do bring in good people. Or do they bring
I've hired
good
a number
people?
Of people from them, so I don't have any problems with them. So, you know, maybe my timing is more efficient than others.
Okay, and would you use a job board primarily for a specific ad or for data mining for people whose resumes are in the resume database?
Both.
Okay.
Anytime I run an ad or simply just go to the data mine, to the resume data bank and pull people, I'm using it. I'm always using it for leveraging other networks.
Well, how does it compare to LinkedIn?
LinkedIn is kind of like a godsend. I mean, it literally gives you direct access to people, title, et cetera, so it makes it so much more easier. So LinkedIn is obviously the cutting edge.
Really? Why? What's the difference between a resume database and LinkedIn?
Well, some people don't have resumes out there. Some of them are professional managers, engineers, et cetera. They're literally not available anywhere, but they are available on LinkedIn.
Okay, so people – but as LinkedIn becomes more of a job board, someone raised this issue last week. If it becomes more of a job board, are we going to see less people putting their profiles up there because then it's going to look like they're looking for a job?
That is a downside. If you connect with me and I'm a recruiter, or if you connect with Jerry and he's a recruiter, it's kind of like sending a signal as to what's that about.
Okay. Now, here's a couple of things. You told me these are your favorite questions. Why are corporate HR recruiters and managers so territorial, even hostile when working with external recruiters? Why are they?
Well, as having been one, you're hostile if you've been burned. I've worked with very good agencies, very ethical, very efficient, effective, and I've worked with people that have, cut us or cut me and hurt us or even canceled our contract because they're doing better business taking from us than serving us.
So give me an example of when you cut somebody.
Well, let me give you an example of one that cut us. I won't name the agency. They're a national entity. We engaged them in Southern in El Segundo, California, for engineers and whatnot.
Harry Adams.
And what's that?
Gee, well, some jerk is talking on the phone. Okay,
gosh.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Anyway,
ignore all my listeners. Okay, they're not the smartest people in the
world.
We
know who that was, and she just lost a ton of credibility.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Anyway, they signed the contract. Everything was copacetic. They were helping us. They were giving us candidates. Then I come to find out that they're ripping us off in Palmdale. And I confront them, and I said, we have a contract that you, blah, 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 will not take from us while you're on contract. And they hem and hawed and kind of ignored, and we'll get back to you. We're trying to check this out. And they finally canceled the contract and said, frankly, we're making more money taking from you than helping you, so
okay,
we're going
to
cancel our contract.
Next question. I'm running out of time. Okay, why do I, as an external recruiter, have to work through HR rather than directly with the hiring manager? I got to tell you, that's a good question because I attended a webinar by Lou Adler last week, and he says if you don't have a good relationship with the hiring manager, you're screwed.
That's wrong.
Well, you're right.
Flat
out
wrong.
What's
I think
wrong
it depends
with that
on the company.
And the reality is HR is the police. They are the people that control malfeasance, unethical behavior.
I love
so
that
what
word,
they do.
Well,
what they do is they control hiring managers. They say everybody has to come through us. We're going to monitor this, make sure everything's on the up and up. And they'll tell you to your face or on the phone, you have to come through me, and everything comes through me, and you do not have access to a hiring manager.
Yeah, okay. You know what? Animal. What?
If that HR person is a competent professional, why do you have to work with someone else? Out of the last 7 or 8 placements that I've made in the past month, only one of them has been with the hiring manager. So
okay.
Lou Adler may say I'm screwed, but I don't mind being screwed like this.
You know what? I worked with an HR professional recently, nice, bright girl, and I said, I need 3 knockout questions. What questions can I ask them so I know? Because I didn't understand the job. You're telling me I don't have to. I wasn't a pro in that field. I said, give me 3 knockout questions. If I ask those questions, they
I hate
answer.
That stupid question. 3 knockout
questions.
Welcome to 1988,
Lefkowitz. I said, that. You know what? Don't let me get my question out. Muffle the truth, you fascist! I'll know if I can ask those 3 questions, intelligent questions, I'll know if this is a person for you or not. Or at least I'll be able to rule the people out. You know what? And she couldn't get those for me. And I couldn't get to the hiring manager to ask the hiring manager. So, I mean, I had a hard
time. Right, and what you're talking about, though, is not an example of me saying, what if the HR person is a competent professional? You're talking about an incompetent HR person. I wouldn't want to work with them either.
Let me say this. The way you work around that is, okay, I have to go through you. Please tell me why this person was rejected. And then they start telling you why they're rejected, and that gives you more feedback. The point of it is they do control it. I remember working with a vice president at Monsanto who transferred to another company and wanted to engage me and knew me personally from Monsanto days. And the HR person stepped in and said, because I was corresponding directly to her VP, and she just stopped me in my tracks and said, from now on, you will correspond with me only. And blah, blah, blah. So the writing's on the wall. If you want the job, you work with the HR rep.
Yeah, someone who doesn't know as much. Because just like you sort of pointed out to us, and we've heard millions of times on social media, these HR people are totally overburdened. They've got like 40 requisitions. So they really don't have that much time to say, when you say, what about this guy? You think he's good? Because you don't really understand the job that well. The guy looks qualified, but you're not 100% sure. You want to be able to talk with someone and say, point out exactly where this person's short so I can go back into the field and identify the people. They don't have time for you, right?
Well, actually, Animal, you kind of have a heart-to-heart conversation with that HR person and remind them that my ass and your ass is in the sling, so if you help me help you, I will be very helpful.
Okay. Anybody else want to talk? I heard someone talking before. Anybody want to talk in the peanut gallery? There's not many people here. I'll give you a chance. No? Okay. Here's one more question from you. What's the best approach to earning respect, getting a company's respect, and getting yourself as a third-party recruiter on the approved search agency list, preferred vendor list? What's the best approach? How do I do that, Tino? Please tell me.
Well, the fact that some of these companies obviously have an approved list, you simply tell them, quite frankly, I appreciate that you have a list. I'm not on it, but here's my qualification. Here are people you know that know me that can speak to that. If given an opportunity for an exotic assignment or an overnight thing, I'm available, and I'm on everybody else's list. Please consider putting me on yours.
No, what if you're not on anybody else's list? Don't use a phony phone.
Well, maybe he is.
Gosh.
Is that impossible?
I'm asking for advice. Okay, Jerry. Okay, Tino, who do I call first, the VP of HR? How do I get into the company if I want to get on their list?
You contact your contacts, people that you know that will leverage for you.
I don't know anybody there. I don't know anybody. That's the point. I
want to
break in.
Tino,
I do.
You always go through HR
because if you go around them, you're already on the doghouse.
Yeah, but who do I ask for in HR? Don't be vague. Don't be vague on
the
staffing manager.
Look up on LinkedIn.
The staffing manager is the pivotal person, what goes down there. They're the one that get the heat.
Every company's HR person is on LinkedIn, Animal.
just do a Boolean search. Type in HR manager at the company, and it will come up. How hard is it? God.
Okay. You know what? A company that's got an approved vendor list, they don't have one HR manager. They've got a big HR team, and they might be, you know, have all kinds of exotic titles.
So
secondly,
create a long tail.
You know what? He's saying, tell them you're going to do their overnight jobs or their hardest to fill jobs. Is that what you're saying, Tino?
Animal, what I'm also saying is that if I have a little information on what's going on, for instance, I'm not going to jump on a call for trying to get on a list if I see a brand new job. But if I see that job hanging there 15, 20 days, I'll call them and say, apparently your list isn't making it. Put me on it.
Okay. So what are you saying? In other words, give me your impossible to fill jobs and let me fail.
Yes, I'm usually called. I'm a cleaner. They call me in when everything else fails.
is that true?
He's a cleaner.
That is true. That is true. Let me give you a sidebar in terms of a minority.
Just call him Harvey Keitel.
Let me put it this way. When I was at Monsanto, there was this minority Vietnamese engineer that was highly desired for a job in Luling, California, and she was taking her sweet time to make a decision. They called me from Luling in St. Louis and said, can you interface? This is a minority candidate, highly prized. We really want her. I get her on the phone. I introduce myself. I understand you're probably selecting from a number of jobs. My question to you is, can I answer anything that will make your decision sooner for us, because we do have an offer on the table? And she said, hey, I'd love to come there, but I can't go to Louisiana. There's just too much discrimination there. And I said, well, where do you intend to go? And she said, Houston. And I said, well, I'm going to give you my name and phone number, and I want you to call me the day you find a place with no discrimination. And I want to know where that's at, because I don't think it's in Houston or Louisiana, but or in Luling, Louisiana. But the point being is that we look for people who can do the job and stand on their own 2 feet. Whether you're in Luling or Houston, that's going to make the difference for you or for us. So I wish you luck, and please consider us down the road.
It's kind of heartwarming.
And what happened? Yeah, it's heartwarming. He said, look, honey, this is such a racist country that you can't escape it. You might as well come to work with us. It's essentially what you said.
Sometimes you have to give a reality check, and her reasoning was, okay, like, there's no discrimination in Texas, please.
Okay, and where did she go?
To Houston.
Houston. You didn't win her. You didn't bring her in. Yeah,
I didn't make my point.
Yeah, okay, right. At least it's an honest story. You didn't lie about it. Now, you know what? We're going to have to go to Jerry's show now, but you and I are not invited to be there, okay? We have to sign off. Tino, I hope you call in again. It was very nice to meet an experienced corporate HR representative who's a full-time recruiter. Thank you!
Hello. That was strange.
What was?
I felt like Animal was consistently out of breath the whole time.
I thought that was a fantastic guest.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the guy was on the money. Best recruiting guest he's had.
Great.
Just for a point of reference, though, I don't consider myself a guest.
I figured as much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Are we the only two on the show?
I don't know. I'm so busy. I had two calls, companies needing to hire people in the past hour, since 12 o'clock.
Wow.
Yeah. Told one of them I couldn't help. Sorry. And the other guy is calling me back at 1:30. A big duck farm.
Well, there you go.
Have you had duck lately?
No, I've never had duck.
Oh. Wrapped in bacon?
If it were wrapped in bacon, it would probably be more likely that I would try duck.
It's very good. Are you and I the only ones on the show here today?
I'm here.
There we go.
Jerry, do you shoot your own duck?
Who else here? Maureen, Rayanne, who else?
Sounds like Dave. David Manister.
Man, we didn't hear you at all during the show, David.
No, I joined about halfway through, and I didn't want to, interrupt, because I didn't know what happened in the beginning.
Sharp guy. That guy was. I thought that guy. He's got my respect.
He's very sharp.
He sounded awesome.
Yeah. Which really surprised Animal, I think. Awesome recruiters surprise Animal.
Yeah,
they really do.
Well, I just sometimes he is so frustrated because he doesn't get what they're saying, right? He gets so caught up in just tell me why you're successful so I can use it, you know, and sometimes it just doesn't,
yeah,
it doesn't pass through the brain the right way or something. I don't know.
And Animal knows this, so it's, I mean, we can talk about it, you know. I
had no problem talking about it just then.
Techniques and approaches that just simply work in recruiting sometimes confuse Animal.
Yeah.
I mean, he can't picture anybody who's not a doctor recruiting doctors. Or not a computer programmer recruiting computer programmers. It just, he can't get his mind around it.
You have to know a little bit about it, but you don't have to be a doctor to recruit doctors. I mean, I recruited nurses for 5 years. I didn't have to be a nurse to do it.
If I were recruiting 500 of the same people, like it sounds like Tino was doing, yeah, the first couple are going to be a steep learning curve.
Exactly.
And I'm going to count on my manager or my client to help shape the next person I introduce to him. But within just a month or so, I would certainly have an idea of what's going on. Yep, but that's just me. That's just me. Well, it's 1 o'clock and I am super busy.
Let's get it over with.
It's 1:01, Jerry. It's 1:01.
Yeah, I know it. Maureen, what are your scores? And last week, Animal wanted to start this whole entertainment value versus
Okay, so what are we doing this week?
I don't know.
You're the boss.
Well, what do you think about that?
The entertainment value?
Did you learn anything today on a scale of 1 to 100?
I always learn listening. I mean,
and we covered that again last week, which that's not surprising.
Okay.
You learn something every day.
What do you want to do? You want to do the entertainment value?
You
and the
do
educational
either one.
Value? Or do you want to do...
Let's do educational value of the show on a scale of 1.
Educational value for those uninitiated basically the guy sounded like a sorcerer to me. He goes after specific target companies that he wants to hire. That's why he can give on-the-spot offers. Because he knows, you know, they're basically prepped because they're working at a specific company. So.
He sounded like more than a sorcerer to me.
He's more than a sorcerer, but, I mean, his basis is in sourcing.
Yeah.
I think the basis of his success comes out of the sourcing technique.
Oh,
so
yes.
For those that don't get that, I mean, the educational value of that, 90, 95? I don't know why I would even take 5 points away. It would be 100. And the entertainment value, I found the show very entertaining. 90.
Okay.
190.
190.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I've missed a few shows, and so I think you changed. Now you're talking. You're not talking about guest and Animal separate.
No, we're talking about the educational value and then the entertainment value. I think Animal didn't want to single out the guest because I'm not quite sure.
I had a hard time being entertained because there was so much yelling. So, I mean, I was educated and got to know Valentino a little bit more. He's an active person on recruiting blogs. And so I've seen him quite a bit, and he is active there. But I would find it very educational in learning a little bit more about him, about what he does. I was very impressed. So I'm going to give 95 to education. I was, however, discouraged often throughout the entire show because Animal kept interrupting and kept yelling and screaming, and Tino kept his cool often. So I'm going to say 75 for entertainment. It just was too hard for me to enjoy.
You know, I tell you, because I've seen some of his stuff on recruiting blogs, which is for sale, by the way. I don't know if you guys had heard that. Tino.
Oh, we can talk about that, Jerry.
Yeah, that's cool.
Huh.
I maybe had misread him from just looking at his stuff.
I completely misread him based on the pictures he posted, and absolutely.
Yeah, bad.
Yeah, so maybe we could be image consultants for Tino, because I felt the same way, Jerry.
Yeah, I mean,
there seemed to be
not
a lot
that,
of
not that
self-
I had a
not that I had a bad impression of him.
No,
I just had something different.
His self-aggrandizement is a little bit high.
Yeah.
But he may view it differently than we received it. So
yeah.
Maybe it was posted in a different with a different intent than it was received. So
yeah, and I probably would do the same thing, but I don't have any trophies or anything to post pictures of. The only thing I've got is pictures of me with fish, big fish.
Yeah. Well, that's a trophy, right?
Yeah.
Those are trophies. Your beautiful wife, there's a trophy.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Tino doesn't have a big old fish. Answer your phone.
That was Manister's phone.
Yes, it was.
What? Manister's phone? Manister's phone is muted when Manister's not talking.
What was that sound? I mean, what was that song there? I liked it. Was that a little
bit of... It wasn't
me. Was it Muse?
Was that Maureen's phone?
That was too hip to be Maureen's.
Maybe it was Animal's. He didn't log off. He's still listening.
Yeah, I don't know. Manister, what do you think about the educational value and content of the show today?
I can't give scores. I wasn't really on for long enough.
Okay, I will give it an 80 and entertainment value a 65. So let's talk about recruiting blogs for sale. What do you think about that?
I read your post, Jerry, and I kind of thought that it was interesting. So you don't want anything on recruiting blogs to change.
Right.
But, you know, I assume you'd like Jason, who's your buddy, to get a good price for it, right?
Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, yeah, sure. What just happened there?
Anything that someone's going to pay a lot of money for recruiting blogs for would be to actually put a business model on it and make some money with it, right? I mean, nobody's going to pay that kind of money.
Yeah,
but
that's not the value.
Right, right.
That's not where the value lies.
But, David, doesn't that then squeeze out the loyal people who – like, everyone hates change. We all know that.
You know, Jerry, I don't think you're wrong. It's actually quite the conundrum. Who's going to pay a lot of money for something that doesn't make any money and that the community doesn't want them to change?
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
I don't know.
It's
interesting.
There is money. I think the behind the scenes could change. I think there is opportunity to make money or to break even, so to speak, to keep it up and running. The issue is taking it from where it is now to that next level without losing what is the most valuable, which is the user-generated content, the user traffic. And
I agree completely, Rianne, that is where the value lies, in that user, you know, kind of the enthusiasm and the content and everything that everyone's generating. I would put it to you, though. You just said that you think that someone could break even with it. Who is going to spend a lot of money to buy something, put a lot of their time into running it to break even? That doesn't sound like a good deal.
Yeah, that was my stock strategy for a while. If I could just get my money back.
Right.
Last couple years, that might have worked for you, Jerry.
Yeah, I'm no longer in the stock business. But, yeah, so who would buy it purely on a philanthropic, good-for-the-community theme? I don't think anybody would.
Uh-oh.
Maureen, control that grandchild.
I'm fascinated by this conversation, and I got a 3.5-year-old here squalling, but I want to hear this conversation.
You know, we can deal with it.
Who will buy something that isn't making any money? I mean, that's the – I sold
business
for
22 years.
But
who's to say it's not making any money?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
People
are advertising on the site.
I could never sell anything that wasn't profitable. Where the purchase price didn't make sense, where it couldn't be repaid back within 2 to 3 years on average.
Well, I'm looking right now, PC Recruit. I see a PC Recruiter ad on there right now.
Yeah, and I can
sure
buy ads
there.
On there. So I've purchased ads. I've purchased long 6 months to a year long advertising contract. I've bought an email blast. There's money to be made. There's definitely money to be made, and I can tell you that the response from recruiting blogs users has been greater than from any other source I've used for that type of marketing, that type of advertising.
The current
no doubt
bid
there's
is,
money to be made, but it's
the current
person
bid
that
is
can 30,000. monetize it. What?
That's 30 grand?
Yep. Current bid is 30,000.
Okay. Well, somebody wants it.
Oh, that'd be bidder number 14.
Mm-hmm.
His initials aren't J-A, are they?
No. Though I have bid on it. You know, back when it was, you know, just regular Hoosier type people could bid, but now it's.
Why don't you bid more, Jerry?
Well, I mean, it gets to the same thing, which is, you know, first of all, it's not an industry that I'm in. It would be interesting to own it, but you know, I'm a recruiter,
well,
which I've demonstrated by spending a bunch of money on a tool that very easily adds an audio clip to your resume. And again, I'm a recruiter, not a software sales guy, so I doubt highly I'll be dabbling in blog ownership. Though
I think that's Jason's reason for selling it, really, when you get down to it, is he wants to get back to recruiting.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I'd buy it right now for $30,000.
What?
I would probably buy it right now for
$30,000. So just to be clear, you think that if Jason was making a ton of money on this, that he'd be just like for the love of recruiting, going back to recruiting?
No, I'm not saying that. Maureen said that.
No, I was addressing Maureen.
No,
Is somebody asking a question?
I can answer that.
I think if he was making, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. It's what Jason wants to do.
I think Jason's tired of the, it takes a lot of work.
Sure it does.
And
a lot of time.
A lot of hassle.
Well, how much
and
is the site making? I mean, what are the hard dollars? What are the hard dollars? Does anybody know?
If anybody did know, that would be confidential.
Yes, and everybody
exactly.
knows.
No, well, I understand.
Everybody knows the problems that Jason's had with management over the last year. Okay, as far as people jumping ship. Okay, so you can't do it alone. You can't
right.
do this completely alone. And it's
right.
been something that he's started alone and ended alone. So it's a difficult
mm-hmm.
task to do what he's doing, and I think he's tired of it. I think he's ready to go back to the private sector and
right.
do it, you know, the part of recruiting that he loved, which was the actual engagement and recruiting part of recruiting, not the, you know, generating blog posts and monitoring activity of users and deleting users and vetting member requests and all
yeah.
those things that come along with being a site owner.
However,
so.
could you do that in an hour a day? Probably. Right?
No.
Jerry,
I don't know.
I think you're underestimating, Jeremy.
No
yeah.
way.
That's what it takes. I mean, being in the same business, I'll tell you that you're grossly underestimating.
Yeah?
Yeah, grossly
yes.
underestimating it.
Grossly. Okay, I am
yeah.
guilty
grossly.
Of gross underestimation today.
Okay, well,
that's
I have
it.
A question. In order to make a bid, how do you get the numbers? I mean, are they being shared?
There's information. There's
just
public information on this on the.
Just call Jason.
Site.
Yeah.
Is there
yeah.
okay? Okay.
He has all the traffic numbers on the Flippa site and the
yeah,
financial
on the
information.
Auction
he
site.
Said that he shares privately.
And
well,
then
Dave,
the numbers, the money numbers are on the site as well.
No,
yeah.
that he shares.
No,
that. He shares
you're
no,
gonna have to call Jason
no.
to get that.
Okay, so you just call him.
He's a very candid guy. I mean, you can give him a call. See, the thing is, in my mind, if PC Recruiter, they're an advertiser on there, if they bought the place, well, then they would just turn it into a PC Recruiter sponsored site, which nobody wants
that. I wouldn't say that's true. That's not true. Because
how do you know that's not true?
Because PC Recruiter recognizes the value of the site.
Okay, so PC
right.
Recruiter would just be, they would also sell advertisement to Talio.
Absolutely. If they were smart, they would. Absolutely.
They would
Bullhorn.
Yeah. They would not.
Yes, they
of
would.
Of course
now,
they would.
I'm not saying they're not smart guys. They certainly are. And I'm not saying that they wouldn't value the community. They would definitely not sell to their competitors. That's just
yeah, I'm just using them as any example. Even if, like if Bullhorn bought it. Bullhorn's not going to advertise for PC Recruiter. So... Then, I mean, once someone buys it who would not want to have anyone else advertising it, then what's to become of it? It's just going to be like a garden that you wouldn't weed and trim.
Do you guys remember Jobster?
Yeah.
Jobster?
The guy,
kind
guys,
of.
The last community?
Yeah. Kind of. What about it?
They had the same issue. Do we maintain it as a community, or do we turn it into something that promotes Jobster?
And for a while, they tried to make it into a community, and it was a lot of work, and that's not the business that they're in. It's just not what they do. And eventually, they just took the domain, and they redirected it, and now they're called recruiting.com.
Right.
But,
and I have
this is not the first time that the company, you know, that a vendor company bought by the community and then is faced with, do we run this or do we use it as a marketing tool?
To me, as a community member, its value is what it is right now, today.
Exactly, exactly.
And it obviously takes effort to keep it that same way. So I don't know what. Sounds like it's perfect for you, Dave.
There's definitely, I'm going to be involved in the bidding process. I really haven't seriously done it yet because all the action happens in the last few hours of these auctions.
I know.
The last
I've
10 minutes of the basketball game, right?
I've just been bidding after a few cocktails every night, enjoying it.
it's a fascinating process.
I'm definitely going to be involved.
Well, I think it'd be a great place for you because you know how to manage a community.
Yeah, exactly.
And not overburden it with, you know,
crap.
All the crap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of factors that go into this, with price definitely being a large one. There's a lot of stuff that can go down with something like that. So.
I mean, I like the place as it is now.
Yeah.
See, because I really only have time for like one recruiter hangout spot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how most people are. You know, I mean, I like ERE. I like the ERE place, but I can't be involved in conversations in different places. It just for some reason just stretches me out too far. So hopefully somebody will just leave it the same because I don't want to go look for a new spot to hang out.
Well, there isn't another
spot. And I guess what I'm telling you is that the hard truth of this is, is that there's nobody in the world who's going to pay $30,000. By the time this is over, it's going to be a lot more than that.
Yep.
Nobody in the world is going to pay that kind of money to leave it the same because it's not bringing in – and again, I haven't seen Jason's numbers. My belief is that it's not bringing in those kind of numbers that would – let someone spend that kind of money to buy it and then see return on that money. I don't see it happening, Jer.
Well, then it will fail if it gets changed. It will fail.
You think that any changes to it are going to make it fail? Any changes?
I disagree with
that a little bit. I mean, we all have to be open to change. I mean, otherwise we wouldn't be using Twitter for whatever reason we are.
Right.
Or Facebook.
We use Twitter to chat with each other.
I love when Jerry talks about Twitter.
And also recruiting blogs came out because change was embraced when it came out. And
Who's this?
This is Alan Fleur.
Uh-huh.
Have you been here the whole time?
You've been looking.
No, I just jumped off of an offer negotiation. I wanted to see if I could hear
it. What were you saying?
I'm just saying that since change happens, recruiting blogs is success. I'm going to put my foot in my mouth here. I'm suspecting we're talking about the purchase of recruiting blogs.
Yeah.
And you know, it's been successful in its own way because it built up organically and there's a value to it, much like LinkedIn built up organically. And now the next step, will the change be good? Potentially it could be. But like Jerry said, I don't have time to hang out at a whole bunch of different places, and if the buyers of it end up doing something wonderful with it and leveraging it, it could be something tremendously spectacular. Although then on the other side, depending upon what the purchaser's goal is and what they think the value is in it, they could, much like I think LinkedIn may end up destroying themselves with the apply here button, because there is this je ne sais quoi of LinkedIn that you can't put your finger on. And what it is it's the, I can put any profile out there, and all it's going to do right now is all the recruiters that are internal at any company, they're just going to get inundated with all kinds of disparate information. And I'll tell you what's going to happen with that. What's going to wreck it is the recruiters internally are going to get sick and tired of the doubling and tripling of applicants. They're going to send everybody a request, fine, let me see the resume. Now they're going to have 2 to 3 times the number of resumes, thus devaluing the value of each successive resume coming in, and but recruiting block, it depends where they end up doing it. It could be wonderful. It could shoot itself in the foot. It depends.
Well, see, being a, you know, a long-term member of recruiting blogs,
yes.
I've seen when Jason would bring someone else in to try to do some different stuff, and it's like everybody just hates it. They're like, well, why did you move the one piece of shit from the one side of the screen to the other? You can't have that. What the hell's going on? So even the slightest little changes just freak everybody out.
What I was going to say about, you know, having been involved at Recruiting Blogs for 4 years now, is watching all of those little changes that would try to take place. And I mean, we had a separate login page at one point. There was a whole different front page at one point. You could read content without being a member at one point. And all of those things were eliminated, but there were little changes that took place during that process that brought ease of use. You know, at one point, chat was really a big deal, and when it failed, there were a certain number of people that left the site.
Do you think it failed? I think it just, you know, went off the front page. And
no.
So.
But chat died because Twitter.
Don't say
it
chat
failed. That's
Maureen.
What I was getting to.
Yeah,
it
don't say chat failed to me.
No, it failed because of Twitter, Maureen. It's exactly why it failed, because people moved to Twitter.
Yeah.
Because it got moved, so they went to Twitter and said, hey,
okay, but chat came down off the front page. I mean, I see people, or I used to see people.
Chat's on the front page right now,
Maureen. It's been back on the front page for a year.
Okay, but when it was off the front page, I used to notice that people said, where's chat? You know, they couldn't find it.
Right, because it changed.
Mm-hmm.
So Jason changed the way things worked. It's just, Dave will confirm this, that over time things have to change, and you have to grow. Technology changes.
No doubt, but I think chat was one of the things that really drove the membership.
And name changes. A lot of the changes that Jason and Recruiting Blogs have gone through is because of Ning, too. So there's a whole other factor to this, that it's not a site, it's not an owner-managed template at all.
And
and
for that reason alone is one of the main reasons why I probably won't bid anymore, because anytime there's an outside service provider, that would just concern me. This is built on someone else's platform. Dave, what do you think about that?
Right.
I think you may have some point there, Jerry, because if more than a bunch of people contribute to it, part of the reason they started contributing to it was because of Jason and the spirit that he created with it. It sort of reminds me of a big company that's working with Jerry, and Jerry is employed by ABC's recruiting firm, and then Jerry leaves and takes the company and takes the client with him. They want the name on the back of the jersey, not the name on the front of the jersey. They don't really care. I don't know
what I'm talking about, though, is it being hosted on a Ning platform. I don't know if that is or isn't a concern.
Yeah,
Manister, should that be a concern or not?
Say it again?
You can migrate it.
You can migrate it. There was
go ahead.
There was talk of migrating, but that also is a huge change and a huge process.
Rayanne,
right?
I'm on the site. I'm on Recruiting Blogs. Chat's not on the first page. You have to scroll down to the bottom, and most people don't.
It's not at the top of the page, Maureen.
It's the bottom of the fold. It's still
at the bottom
page.
Of the front page, but you've got to scroll down to see it.
Right,
it's under the fold. I get what you're saying. It is on the first page, though. You don't have to click
it is on the first page. You're right.
Let me ask Dave Manister my question again.
But it needs to be front and center.
I have to go.
That's the community talking. That's the community happening. That's what made it exciting.
It's not going to happen.
Manister.
That's not going to happen.
Dave Manister. You still there, Dave?
Yep.
Is the fact that Recruiting Blogs is on Ning any concern at all?
Yes.
Yeah, see.
A big concern or small or?
It's a risk.
It's big.
Thanks, Dave.
Because for a few reasons, the first of which is that Ning is not widely perceived as a company that's like on the uptrend. You know, it's like nobody. It's a venture capital backed company. Nobody really knows if it's going to be around in a few years. So it may be inevitable that that Recruiting Blogs has to go somewhere else. And not only that, but there's, you know, anyone who's buying it is probably buying it for some level of access to the database.
The people, yeah.
to the name?
To the members?
Well,
I say the database as opposed to the people because, you know, you can market to a database, you know, directly. And that's why a lot of the bidders who are involved are bidding. And with Ning, you know, Ning kind of controls that information. You don't have direct access to it, like, say, on a website that you build yourself. And that's a problem for a lot of people, and it kind of adds a layer of uncertainty to the whole thing.
Dave.
Yo.
Alan Fleur, her question about that topic. Is Ning providing, I would hope, a spreadsheet on the monetary value of the marketing to the database or a value to the database that can be quantifiable at this point?
Is Ning providing that?
No, it's not Ning's.
Okay,
yeah,
well,
Ning's
well,
not selling this.
Jason's
selling this. Jason's
selling it, so the bidding that I saw on Twitter a few minutes ago was up somewhere around 30K. So my question is, and I agree that I think a lot of the value that people, that some bidders are looking at is the value of that data and how can we monetize it. Has there been a monetized number put on it at this point?
Well, right now it's 30K.
No, that's the bid. My question is,
well, that's how people sign.
It's only worth what somebody's willing to pay, right?
Something like this.
If I'm buying a business, I'm buying a multiple of the cash flow or a multiple of some number. I would suspect, Dave, there's some number that's been created based on this data.
That is a different question. The first question was, what is the value of the database? The second question is, what is the multiple of the cash flow? I don't know the answer to either of those questions.
What did Salesforce value Jigsaw's database at? I forget the number.
Sorry?
What did Salesforce value Jigsaw's database at?
I have no idea, but I'll tell you that all databases are not created equal.
Exactly.
It's
a whole different underlying model.
Here's another question.
They're not going to be valued the same way.
Here's another question. They've got 28,000 members. How many of those are active? I mean, how many of those are still around?
300.
Well, no, seriously,
hey guys,
that's a very important question, and nobody talks about that.
I am going to sadly have to not finish the rest of this call, but it's an interesting topic. I just have a client that I have to call back that actually needs to hire somebody, which brings in my expertise, which is
somebody. Bye.
But no,
Jerry, I want to
keep
to you
talking.
Later.
Keep talking.
You didn't even talk to me about Fox News, Jerry.
I know it.
And
I want to.
I
want to talk about the truth.
Jerry,
I'm
going to talk about facts.
Your Sarah Palin email about how she's right.
Let me tell you, Sarah Palin was right. Now, everybody knows that. That's been clarified.
You said you were going to send me a link. I'm still waiting.
Dang it. I know.
Jerry.
Man, I've just been so busy.
Jerry,
I really have. I tell
Jerry,
you what I like is that very sexy Michelle Bachman.
Yeah, I knew that was next.
Mm-mm.
You can get Alan's scores.
Alan, what are your scores for an entertainment value of the show? He only called in for the after show.
Oh, this is the after show.
No, he was on.
Sorry,
he just couldn't talk.
See, a lot of people think that this is the show.
I'm sorry. I just dialed in. I have the number on a post to Jerry. By the way, Jerry, I'm going to be calling you later today.
About business, I hope. Okay.
Yeah. About the emails we traded a few days ago.
Cool. Well, great, everybody. I need to go get a glass of water and call my duck manufacturing client. And, yes, agriculture is manufacturing. I'm going to call them at 1:30. And then I'll tweet at about 2:15 what the call was about. Stay tuned for it, everybody.
All righty. Bye.
Thanks,
see y'all.
Bye, everybody.
Are you guys done? I'll take that as a yes.
You know, I have my issues with all of them, with recruiting blogs. Jason Davis, I love the guy. I don't like some of the decisions he made. David Manister, same thing. I have his home phone numbers. I love the guy. He knows that I've got his back. Same thing with Jason. But, you know, everyone is trying to create a community that is different. And you know what? None of them are different. There is nothing new that hasn't in articles that come coming out on all these blogs and all these sites that we haven't touched upon 10 years back, 15 years back, 20 years back. Nothing is new.
Who can turn the world on with a smile?
can take a nothing day and suddenly make it all seem worthwhile. Well, it's you, girl, and you should know it. With each glance and every little movement you show it.